You are listening to Miller and Moulton, exclusively on the Florida Sports Network. And now, here's Mark Miller and David Moulton.
It is 6 a.m. where he is. He's David Sampson, host of Nothing Personal with David Sampson. He records it live 1 hour from now. You can follow David on X at David, the letter P, Sampson, David P. Sampson. His world tour, you know, I lost track of where you were. I thought you were in Boston. You're in Nashville.
Okay. Time just keeps rolling.
Remember, the key is we can lose track of where you are. You can't. You can't walk out on stage and say, hello, Cleveland, and be in Chicago.
Just so I have these Nothing Personal Live with David Sampson cards, and the first card of every show has the name of the city. I learned that from Bruce Springsteen. When Bruce Springsteen walks on the stage, and I was lucky enough, look at me, Louie, to go backstage several times, double look at me, the name of the city is hugely printed on the stairs and lit up as the band members walk onto the stage.
Well, it's obvious he's seen Spinal Tap then and doesn't want his Hello Cleveland moment. So that's fantastic.
Exactly.
How has the live show evolved? I mean, you've done a few of these. You know, you said it was very much geared towards the city you're in, but as you continue on tour, is the show evolving?
Oh, for sure. It's a different show every time, and that's what's cool. It's a different crowd every time. Philly was different than Boston. Boston obviously was different than Nashville. The crowd last night was fantastic. I talked a lot about the Tennessee Titans. We talked quite a bit about MLB expansion, which is a subject that obviously is interesting to them because there's the thought there could be expansion. And I don't think we got to the Predators, but we did get to OJ. So it was a pretty diverse show. We talk about a lot of subjects and it goes for an hour and a half and then you're on to the next city. So I'm leaving here and heading to Pittsburgh.
All right. By the way, what do you think? Because the thought is that when baseball goes from 30 to 32, they're going to have one team kind of in the eastern half of the country, and the other one will come from the western half of the country. And the thought is that Nashville, it's Nashville's franchise to lose. Okay. Do they want it? You've been through this before. When you look around, you go, oh, yeah, baseball will be fine here.
Well, it's interesting you say that. I didn't say that off the top of my head. And they've put together an interesting group. There's a lot of celebrities in it. Don Mattingly, my former manager, has his name associated with the music singers. There's history of baseball here. You have to have a roof. There's no question about that. You've got to get a building funded, and you've got to get some sort of broadcast deal in place, and you've got to find local ownership with significantly deep pockets, because the way expansion is going to work, and it's going to happen because the existing owners want money, but the fee is going to be very, very high because the owners want money. So you're going to need a very deep-pocketed ownership group.
You know, the Braves had always had a problem with Charlotte. Now that the Braves are in Marietta, are the Braves going to have a problem with Nashville, David?
You know, it's interesting. We talked a lot about the Braves because the Braves used to have a problem with everything because of where they came from. And remember, they used to have, this is a long time ago, but in our time, the WTBS, so they were known as a national team. Really, the Braves and the Cubs were the teams that people could watch around the country because of GN and TBS. So the Braves have always had this view during owners' meetings, even with Liberty Media, before Liberty Media, that they somehow were special. But I think what they've realized now at Truist Park, where they derive substantial revenue around the ballpark, that doesn't actually get counted for revenue sharing. It is my belief that they will be far more cooperative about everything because of the existing situation they find themselves in.
He's David Sampson. Nothing Personal with David Sampson. He will record it like he always does, weekdays at 8 a.m. live. What do you make of this whole Ohtani interpreter gambling story? Is it believable to you what the conclusion seems to be? That Ohtani just got duped?
Yeah, I was trying to think in the last 24 years since I got into baseball, 25 years. I believe the Ohtani situation is the most asked question I've ever gotten from people, not just in the media, but people on the street, people in restaurants. It has transcended baseball in a way that no story has prior to this. There's people who have an opinion about Ohtani who had never heard of Ohtani. And I know that sounds crazy that we've all heard of him, but there are people who simply have not heard of him. And when I tell people that he could have lost $16 million out of his bank account without knowing, it blows people's minds. But that's the truth. The truth is that baseball players like an Ohtani, very common. His bills get paid for him. When he needs money to buy something, he gets money to buy it. When he needs money to go to dinner, he has a credit card that he never sees the bill of. He can buy whatever house, whatever car, he can buy anything he wants. And that sort of financial freedom can open yourself up, if you're not surrounded by the right people, to financial fraud. And financial fraud is clearly what happened. The question as to, and this is where I have some question, I don't know if I'm with a best friend, and I don't think I can stress enough, the interpreter Mizuhara was his best friend. They were together all the time. I think it's pretty hard to be with your best friend and watch a woman's field hockey game and watch your best friend jump up and down and scream and cry with the result. And I'm obviously joking. I don't know if it's women's field hockey, but he was making 25 bets a day, any 12,000 average bet for years, and losing tens of millions of dollars. Is it possible that Ohtani had no idea? I worry about that, because then you hear Tyler Glasnow get interviewed on a podcast where he said, hey, we all met Mizuhara here and we thought he was shady from the start. Why didn't you say anything to Shohei? It's not as though you have to go through the interpreter to speak to Shohei. That is what we try to tell people out there is how it works. But I had Ichiro. Ichiro could communicate with his teammates. If they thought he was shady, they should have communicated with him, but not the player's fault. I definitely blame Mizuhara, but I also think there's culpability with his advisors.
Doesn't he have to get new advisors for, I mean, doesn't ever, yes. Isn't everybody fired? If you were advising him, would you get rid of everybody?
Agent.
Right.
You haven't heard from his agent. I assume he's going to get fired. His accountant, his financial advisor, all of them who in the affidavit, and I read it paragraph to paragraph, every line of the 37-page affidavit, these advisors accepted the interpreter's comments, hey, you can't look at that account, it's private. Ohtani doesn't want you looking at that account. The accountant, you don't get to say that to your accountant. You don't get to say that to your financial advisor. You certainly shouldn't get to say that to your agent. So there's also a bank in the affidavit, and they named it Bank A. Bank A took a call from Mizuhara impersonating Ohtani and said, oh, yeah, this works. We'll wire $500,000 to some unsavory, strange account that we can't verify. So Bank A is going to get discovered at one point or another, and there's going to be an issue with Bank A for what they did and their culpability. So there's a lot of things that had to happen for Ohtani to have his money stolen and for Mizuhara to lose $40 million.
We separate people's personal lives and professional lives. Okay. Ohtani reportedly is meticulous as a player in his preparation, in his routine and what have you. So that's also something that's difficult for those of us. You can be that meticulous in one aspect of your life and that clueless, absent-minded, whatever it is, but the two don't seem to jive. But David, you were involved. You knew that there were athletes that were like that on the field they were one way and off the field they were completely different.
But I know people like that in real life too. My daughter is in the production industry and is so organized and runs productions, and yet her house, it looks like a tornado went through and she forgets to open checks and pay bills. And there are people on Wall Street, when I worked on Wall Street, who were worth hundreds of millions of dollars, billions of dollars, running a business, and yet they never paid attention to their own finances. So it's like having a doctor who doesn't go to the doctor when his stomach hurts because he assumes his stomach's fine, and then all of a sudden he has an ulcer or something. So I also think it's normal for Ohtani to be as meticulous as he is on the field and to have no care at all about the finances off the field. That part doesn't surprise me either.
Speaking of ulcers, if you were still running the Marlins, you may have one right now. I'm just curious, when a start is this bad, if you're the White Sox 2-14, if you're the Marlins 3-14, what, I know it's a long season, blah, blah, blah. What the hell are you doing right now? Because I would think you're freaking out.
I'm living in the blah, blah, blah. I mean, you say that, but the Marlins are 17 games in. They've had an early lead. Like last night, they were up 3-0 and lost 4-3. Their bullpen's been horrific. You got to move out some of the bullpen arms. Just keep cycling them through and hope you find someone hot. You say to yourself, listen, starting pitching, we sent out Max Meyer. I'm going to talk about it on today's show. We'll bring him back. He's on an innings limit. We got Cabrera back. He pitched last night. He pitched great. They are a bullpen away from being a great team. So that is what I'd be saying. I would not be despondent. I would be unhappy. I'd be more unhappy with the leaking of the news about Schumacher. That was done so clumsily that he's going to be gone at the end of the year. That's a distraction I didn't want with the team trying to get back into the playoffs. And that's a distraction that will hover over them all season long. And that part would bother me.
Forget the leaking of the news. How about the actual news? What are you doing? He won manager of the year last year.
He wanted out, and there's a way he's going to be gone at the end of the year. And you can book it and bank it right now. That
well,
Skip
yeah,
Schumacher,
they didn't pick up his option for 2026.
But
five,
it was not. So it was his choice. The Marlins, there'd be no financial incentive to void the option now. You can have a gentleman's agreement, which just says, we won't pick it up.
He already referred to management in the past tense when doing an interview yesterday. He already called them they.
It's really, if you listen to that, and I actually tweeted about that, it was staggering because that is lesson one. When you meet with your manager and they're meeting with the media, we're we. We're always we. It's if you pit yourself against us in the front office, we're going to have a problem. And what Skip did there, trying to distance himself from the Max Meyer demotion, I found to be not ideal.
He's David Sampson. Nothing personal with David Sampson. He's in Nashville. The world tour continues. You're wearing merch and everything. I mean, do we have mugs, hats? I mean, how far are we going?
I have all those at davidsampsonpodcast.com. You can get anything you want and wear it and enjoy it. People are coming to the shows wearing merch, and I'm just so appreciative of the fact that anyone listens. It's really nice. So thank you guys. You guys have been a huge help in getting this going.
Well, if you think so, we're not going to dispute you, at least not on air. Let's go to break till he realizes the truth. David Sampson, nothing personal. He records it in 47 minutes. Safe travels, my friend.
Take care. Thank you.
Follow him on X at David, the letter P, Sampson. David P. Sampson. Mark, he thinks we're a big deal. Maybe he'll do our merch.
I know.
You're listening to Miller and Moulton, only on the Florida Sports Network. And now, here's Mark Miller and David Moulton.
21 minutes past the hour. Miller and Moulton, millerandmoulton.com, Miller_Moulton on X. So the 8-track machine is broken, or it's jammed. And we're pounding the heck of it on the side, and it's still jammed. And because of it, we're not going to be able to do the play of the day. So we'll give some love to Molly Maid. Maybe Molly Maid today will sponsor our poll question. Of course, we have to have a poll question. And so far, we're jammed. Okay? Somebody needs to, you know, beat us on the side of the machine like we're an A-track.
So I have a bad poll question.
Okay.
But this struck me. And even Nance pointed it out. As Scheffler was leaving the 18th and walking down the pathway to the clubhouse to sign his scorecard, and he's high-fiving or giving to five to everybody, the patrons there, he hands one of them his glove. And that fan, you would have thought, was given a gold bar. He got a sweaty golf glove that may or may not fit. There's absolutely no use of it. I'm trying to think of the most irrelevant sports memorabilia thing that you could get. And I'm torn between the golf glove and the tennis wristband that they throw into the crowd. Because that's the absolute worst to me. Hey, I've been perspiring for 3 hours here at Wimbledon. Let me throw a sweaty wristband up in the crowd and you guys can fight over it. So I'm trying to figure out between the golf glove and the sweaty wristband, what's the worst piece of sports memorabilia out there?
Well, I always laughed at concerts when, you know, the guitarist just throws the, you know, a bunch of picks into the crowd. And I'm like, well, what am I going to do with this?
With the guitar pick? If you actually had a guitar, you could play the guitar with said guitar pick. There is a use of that. I want to know what the use of the golf glove is. You know, the drumstick is more of a arbitrary thing thrown out there because it's, you know, you've got one. What do you do with one drumstick? Unless you're the drummer for Def Leppard, it doesn't seem to work.
Whoa!
That was outstanding what you just
flag
did.
Flag on the play!
What for?
No, I don't know. We'll confer as a group, and I might pick up the flag. But my first inclination is that is roughing the passer.
Rick Allen, getting a shout-out.
Maybe upon further review, we'll pick up the flag, but... how about a signed golf ball?
I have one. You probably throw years away.
Tonight, Chris Berman signed right. golf balls for us.
Last time we were at the shootout, last time we had Berman on, he signed a couple of golf balls. And I have a bookshelf in my office with very few pieces of memorabilia, but things I've collected over the years that I like, and that golf ball sits on the shelf.
Okay, can people tell it's Berman's signature?
Yeah, you could tell. If I showed you, you could see that it's Chris Berman.
Okay.
I think. I know it is. That's all that really matters.
Gotcha.
But I'm trying to figure out what the worst memorabilia, and you might be on it, the guitar pick, the drumstick.
But we could just, you know, stick with sports if you're wanting to do it that way. So you think that a golf glove... apparently someone in our Twitch chat room has got a tee from Tiger Woods.
How do you prove that?
Well, it's not like you can get a letter of authenticity.
Thank you.
You can't get a certificate with it, but then again, you're not going to sell it in an infomercial. So,
But that golf, I mean, and the excitement that the patron had from receiving said golf club is what, I mean, I've got Scheffler's golf club. I can do it now.
Well, I guess it's kind of cool. He just won the Masters. He gave you the glove that he wore during the final round, at least. I mean, it's a nice little piece of memorabilia.
I put the other end of Velcro up on your desk, and then you just stick that glove on there.
I mean, you know, I'm not calling Darren Revelle and looking for how much it's worth, but so I don't know. I mean, put it this way. If you were the guy in the crowd that Tiger threw the golf ball to, was that Friday? Okay, he was walking off the green and Tiger threw the golf ball. Okay, some guy yelled something. It caught Tiger's attention. Tiger, you know, threw him the ball. No signature or anything on the ball. It's
right.
It's just a golf ball. It's a, you know, whatever. Titleist, you know, one. You know, don't know if the ball had any markings on it.
Yep.
I mean, you know.
Bridgestone these days, but.
Okay, that's true. Well, no. Tiger's been known to be getting paid by somebody and using different stuff.
Right, but he's using the Bridgestone ball.
Okay. All right. So I just, you know, I mean, what do? You put that on your desk, you know, glass casing, Tiger Woods, 2024 Masters. Then you have people look at it and go, really? Yeah, I was the guy who caught the ball. I mean, what do you have to do? Have to have a picture next to it?
Have to have, if there's a, you know, a still.
Because there's video of right. Tiger throwing the guy the ball. So you got to get it and put that next to it, right?
Exactly.
That's your letter of authenticity. So
I'm still, you know, and the golf ball is fine. The sweaty golf glove and the sweaty wristband from the tennis player. I think they're at the bottom of the sports memorabilia pile.
So you wouldn't use it. You wouldn't use, if Scheffler gave you the glove, you wouldn't for the member or member guest next year, you wouldn't go, oh, he's breaking out the Scheffler glove.
Not sticking my hand in his sweaty glove.
Oh, for goodness sake, you're a guy. Okay, you eat food off the floor. Come on now. I'm not putting Scheffler. First off, it's already dry. okay? Please.
Just certain things I don't want to share with another person, and a golf glove is one of them.
Even a two-time Masters champion,
yes.
Huh? Okay.
I'll wear his green jacket, but I'm not wearing his golf glove.
You're not allowed to wear his green jacket. The Gestapo shows up the minute you wear it out of the house. You get arrested. We never hear from you again. And you know it.
So these are the things I think about, David. And I apologize for that, but I...
Those are the things you think of.
When that glove was handed to that guy, and Nance made a comment that he's really excited, I was thinking the same. Like, he read my mind. I'm like, wow, that guy is super jacked over getting a sweaty golf glove. I don't know if I would be as excited over getting that piece of memorabilia that he probably threw away on the ride home. What the hell am I going to do with this? I'm a lefty. It doesn't even work.
I will say, in the Twitch chat room, besides the fact that we're getting nominations for what would be the worst, some of which I really can't read on the air, okay, but we're also now having people tell us, like, their best piece of memorabilia or obscure memorabilia that they have. You know, Michael in Fort Myers has let us know he has a golf ball signed by Bert Campaneris, okay, which, you know.
Signature would take most of the ball.
Well, yes, and he even said it took him about 30 seconds to sign it, but you can read it perfectly. That is a big last name to do on a golf ball. That's difficult. That's where you may just want to stop at Bert or Bert C. Here you go. Are you Bert Convy? No, Bert Campaneris. Thanks. But so what you got to come up with the four options then. Apparently, Scottie Scheffler's glove is the bottom of the barrel.
Well, next to the tennis wristband, because that's going to have more perspiration on it. That's going to be, okay, I mean, that one, they don't even wring it out.
Okay, what about the towel? The towel they've been wiping their sweat on all day. You can wash the towel. You can. You don't have to use it. You can wash that towel. And then you've got a towel from a tennis tournament and a top player, say.
A Wimbledon towel?
Yeah.
It's a nice color purple.
Right, that Federer used to wipe his sweat off. Four beads of sweat in a five-hour match.
Welcome back to Miller and Moulton, only on the Florida Sports Network.
22 minutes till the top of the hour. Pat Kerwin joins us at that point in time of the show on this Tuesday edition of Miller and Moulton, millerandmoulton.com, Miller_Moulton on X. Still no poll question. Just saying, pressure's on the two of you. Okay, I'm pushing all the emphasis on the two of you for a poll question. I mean, you know, Trent's got to contribute something. He's been gone for 2 days. Come on, kid. All right? Come up with something. Contribute.
He's still on vacation. Don't kid yourself.
I know. And it wasn't supposed to be a vacation. I mean, he went back for some medical testing, and then, you know, 8 flights got canceled, and, you know.
I'm looking for an engineer to hopefully come in here and fix our crap.
Oh, that's right. And see, and he think that he hurried, not really, back. And see, this is the broadcasting gods messing with them. Oh, so you miss an extra day of work. Well, we'll have the equipment not work for you when you get back. How about that? Uh-huh.
So, David, I stumbled upon an article, and I don't know if it's way too early to bring something like this up. In fact, I know it's way too early to bring it up, but I'm going to do it anyhow.
You mean in the show, in the day, or in the sports year?
Yes.
Uh-oh.
But you and I are both fans of Warren Sharp. Sharp Football does a great job.
Uh-huh.
He had done his win projections for the year, and based off of that, he has done his strength of schedule for the 2024 season. And I have the teams with the easiest and the hardest schedules based on their opponents. And we don't have order yet, but we know who everyone's playing.
Oh, just lay it on me. This is football porn to me. Let's go.
All right, teams with the hardest schedules this year.
Uh-huh.
The Pittsburgh Steelers, according to Warren Sharp, have the toughest schedule in the National Football League next year.
Well, you got to figure that all the teams in the AFC North are going to have quote unquote hard schedules because, well, everybody in the division was above 500. So there's six games right there.
In fact, David, three of the five teams with the hardest schedules all come from that division. So you are absolutely right. The New England Patriots have the second most difficult schedule.
Oh, man, that's unfair. Their roster sucks.
It does. And coming off of having one of the toughest schedules a year ago, back-to-back for the Patriots.
Ugh.
The Browns have the third toughest schedule.
Makes sense.
The Ravens have the fourth most difficult schedule. And the Vikings have the fifth toughest schedule.
Oh, man, they don't have a quarterback.
No, they do not.
I wonder if Kirk Cousins left. He knew what was coming.
Now the teams with the easiest schedules. The easiest schedule, the fifth easiest schedule, we'll do this in reverse order, build up some, you know, a little climax to the top team.
Are you going to do the Def Leppard drumming with just one drum? Is that what you're going to do? That kind of build up?
That kind of build up.
Okay.
The New Orleans Saints have the fifth easiest schedule, followed by the Jets. Now, the Jets is interesting, obviously, because Aaron Rodgers back, their projected win total is 9.5.
So let me get this straight. In the same division, the Patriots have one of the five hardest schedules and the Jets have one of the five easiest?
Yes. Mainly because they get to play the Patriots twice. The Bears have the third easiest schedule. The Chargers with the second easiest schedule. And the Atlanta Falcons, according to Warren Sharp, have the easiest schedule in the league next year.
Back up the truck, baby, on Kirk Cousins. Let's go.
For the record, the Bucs have the 11th easiest schedule.
How about the Dolphins?
The Dolphins have the 8th easiest schedule.
Ooh. Okay.
And where are my Jags? The Jags have the 14th easiest schedule. So all of them in the top half of the league as far as, and this is based on Vegas's forecasted win totals and the schedules that are coming together that he put out this strength of schedule compilation.
I thought I saw in some of the material that Warren Sharp released that he basically said, you may want to gear up on the Bengals. First off, Mark, the Bengals were not included in amongst the five toughest schedules. The other three teams in the Bengals division were the Ravens, the Steelers, and the Browns. The Bengals did not make the top five. But I thought that I saw him point out that the Bengals last year ended up playing half the season without Joe Burrow. And they played 11 games against playoff teams. Well, think about it. The other three teams in their division all made the playoffs. So that's six games right there. But he said, think about it. The Bengals played 8-9 games without Joe Burrow, finished with a winning record, and 11 of their 17 games were against teams who made the playoffs.
And now they get a last place schedule.
Right.
Well, the crossovers make a difference.
Sure, I get it. They do. Also, he's counting on 17 games out of Burrow. So I think Warren Sharp is indicating that he thinks Cincinnati is going to have a big bounce back season this year.
Burrow did the Kelseys are doing their podcast live in cities. They were just in Cincinnati and did their what the hell's the name of their podcast?
Well, the Kelce Brothers podcast, isn't that just what it's
called? No, I thought they had a name for it. Anyhow, they were in Cincinnati and Burrow was their guest. Burrow has no problem with taunting. That was the thing that came out of it, that he would take away the NFL's taunting penalties, that they wouldn't be a part of the league. It's like, we work too hard to make plays, and we're grown men and should be able to take the abuse if you get sacked or whatever the case may be.
It's a no fun league. It's the no fun league. Well, like there was a penalty in the AFC Championship game. Remember, was it Kyle Van Noy of the Ravens got a taunting penalty late first half in which it was like, are you serious? With everything that's going on in this game, you're going to give them 15 yards? And they were backed up. The Chiefs were deep in their own end late in the first half, and it got them out of a situation. And you were like, wow. But, and of course, it was, he was the second one to taunt. They didn't catch the first guy that taunted. So, listen, I'd have no, but, you know, then again, we're in favor of expression. We're in favor of celebration. You know, they're not.
No, they're not. And New Heights is the name of the podcast. Thanks, Jim, for pointing that out for those that were probably screaming at me in their cars right now saying, you dummy. It's the New Heights podcast.
Well, they weren't screaming at you. You knew it wasn't called the Kelce Brothers. Okay? You just didn't know what it was called. You know, it's all those years doing a show. You've got rabbit ears. See, Trent's new. He doesn't have rabbit ears. He doesn't realize that there people are yelling at him in their cars. You know, he's still new. He's oblivious to it. He's kind of like Oberg at the Masters. You know, he was just walking around.
Big smile on his face, having a good time.
Right. Yeah. It's just like, oh, wow, this is a hell of a walk. Good course. I like it. You know, he didn't have a three-putt. First guy in 6 years to be playing in his first Masters and not have a three-putt. That is pretty impressive.
I hope, for all of our sakes, that this kid can continue playing well.
Well, how could we not like him when he sticks a big old sandwich in his mouth on 14 after knocking it to about a foot and a half? Not a banana, you know, not a power bar. He reaches into the bag and he took, dare I say, a molten bite out of that sandwich.
Looked to be an Augusta Club. There was not a pimento cheese sandwich.
No.
There was something to that.
Right. You know, that sandwich might have been $2. You know, that's how much they had to charge for that. Looked like it was rye bread and everything. Looked delicious. He just stuffed it right in his mouth. Like, I could root for that guy. Devouring a sandwich, walking up to the 14th green in the final round of the Masters.
And smiling all the time and looking like he was having fun playing golf. Yeah, he's an easy guy to root for.
Right. So Scheffler, he could smile a little more. I mean, he could.
The best was Scheffler after getting the jacket saying, I just want to go home. Look, I'm up here answering your questions. I just want to go home.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, people love that. People love that.
That's how you win the room over right there.
No doubt. Hey, Scotty, listen, I really, could you just get these questions out of the way? I want to go. Okay. All right. Good. But we did talk about it yesterday, though. Don't know how much prep he's going to get for the PGA. You know what? I also heard an interesting stat about Scheffler. This is remarkable when you think about it. All of his wins are in the months of February, March, and April. He doesn't have a single tour win past April.
And if he had his way, he'd take the rest of the year off.
Now, you know, you still got three majors to play. You got Jack's tournament, right? I mean, I don't know how many more times you got to tee it up. I don't know how many elevated events we have left. I mean, I think this week's an elevated event. He ain't going to Hilton Head. He's going home. I don't think he plays before the PGA, to be honest.
I don't either.
Not that he has to, but...
No, I don't think you see him before the PGA, and then we'll see what happens in the summer.
Probably plays then Jack. 3 weeks later is Jack's tournament, and then 2 weeks after that's the U.S. Open. And I don't know, maybe he plays one event before the Open Championship. And who knows if he plays the one in Connecticut before flying over or if he goes over and plays the Scottish Open. But I just found that interesting. you know, he's apparently he's just about done winning. According to his past, he won't win anything else the rest of the year. That is February, March, April. That's his go time.
So it's Scheffler, Scheffler, Scheffler.
Right.
Right. January, Scheffler, Scheffler, Scheffler.
Right. That's how it goes. Yep.
Because he wins. See, that's why you get the month named after you.
Right. And Koepka's won three PGAs, so May is now named Koepka. So it's January, Scheffler, 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 Koepka. And then, you know, we got to come up with something for June. I mean, Jack has his tournament in June, and he won four U.S. Opens. I mean, we could call June Jack. You can't call it Nicholas. See, he's a first-name guy.
You've got that right.
You know, like, I'm not calling them Scotty and Brooks. No. Mm-mm. There's Tiger. There's Jack. Phil just makes the cut. Jess, six majors, one of the 15 greatest golfers of all time, maybe one of the 10 best. And he just makes the first name cut.
Rory?
I mean,
because you're right. Scotty, you could go a lot of. Scotty could be Pippen for crying out loud.
Well, sure.
But Rory?
I won a major in 10 years.
I understand.
He's come close.
Yeah. Okay. That's great. No, seriously.
I know. I know. I just had to throw it in there.
But now he's won. He's won like three DP World Championships. He's won two or three Tour Championships. I don't know. I don't think he's got the complete resume yet to be a one-name guy. I know that's how we refer to him, but if you really think of it, I mean, is he worthy of just being a one-name guy?
No. You know,
Madonna, you know, Whitney.
Well, you got to get lucky, too, because even if you're worthy of being a one-name guy, you can't always be a one-name guy because your name isn't unique enough.
You know. Bruce. Now this is where I'm going to get Mark mad at me. Bon Jovi.
I don't know how Bon Jovi could be. You're breaking your own rules. That's a last name, not a first name. And you are just trying to get under my skin.
You know what I'm going to do?
I'm going to take a sweaty wristband and throw it at you and say, here's your memorabilia while I tell everyone else Pat Kerwin is next right here on Miller and Moulton.